Welcome to War Room, the official podcast of the U.S. Army War College Online Journal, graciously supported by the Army War College Foundation. Please join the conversation at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. We hope you enjoy the program.
Hello and welcome to A Better Peace, the War Room podcast. I'm Andrew Hill, and today I'm joined by Mr. Tim Warren. Tim is a producer. He has worked on such well-known television programs as Live with Regis and Kathy Lee, Extreme Makeover Home Edition, Deadliest Warrior, Bar Rescue, and he's currently working on a new series with an undisclosed title for Discovery that will be airing in early 2019. Tim Warren is joining us here at the War College as a guest as part of the War College's National Security Seminar, which is a program the school does annually, inviting prominent civilians from various areas of American life to come to the War College for a week, sit with students in seminar, and have great conversations about national security. Tim, welcome to our podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Really appreciate you having me, Andrew. And it has been an amazing week here at the War College here in Carlisle.
Well, I'm so glad you've enjoyed it. You know, when you introduced yourself in seminar the other day, you talked about a documentary that you've created about that was based on an experience that you had in high school. The documentary is called High School 911, and it is about the only emergency medical service station in the United States that is run by high school students. And as we've been talking about this, I thought this would be a great topic for conversation on our podcast, because the military is an organization that expects a lot from young people. And as you were discussing it, you talked about how you see this documentary, High School 911, as part of a broader conversation about what we expect from younger people in this country. So can you tell me a little bit about the genesis of the project? Where did it come from?
Well, the organization is Darien EMS Post 53, and it actually was founded in 1970. It started as a Boy Scout Explorer post and later developed into a fully accredited emergency medical service. I was fortunate enough to be a member of this organization when I was in high school. And even though I didn't go into the medical field, the things that I learned on the ambulance three decades ago, I still use today as an executive producer, showrunner, and multi-camera director. And it's skills like time management and stress management and team management, and really being a relentless problem solver and having a never give up attitude. And, you know, those things really apply to whatever business you go into and really in life. And I think there's also some very similar, you know, attributions to the military. You know, those are all great skills to have in any branch of the military as well. So this organization actually was really part of the birth of EMS. You know, you hear about a teenage high school run emergency medical service and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, that sounds scary, and that you wouldn't want to be hurt in Darien, Connecticut.
Yeah, anyone in the middle of a medical emergency probably doesn't want to hear, "Hello, sir, I'm a teenager and I'm here to help you."
And it's interesting because often people will ask, well, you know, does that happen? Do patients take one look at these young people and say, "You're too young, I don't want you to help me"? And the reality is that in 50 years, that's actually never happened. And the reason is that when you're, there's multiple reasons, but one is, as a patient, when you are in need, and, you know, if someone's coming with an ambulance, you know, there's a certain level of seriousness, and someone kneels down next to you and says, "I'm here to help," you're like, "Thank God," you know, because I need
help. Not going
to
be picky.
I'm not going to be picky, but you're also not thinking, there's no way in your mind that you're thinking about this person's age. You're thinking about, am I going to die? Am I going to be all right? So that's part of it. And I think the fact that these young people are so well trained and so professional that they never realize how young they are. You know, in the movie, you know, we had one patient that the young crew was treating, and after, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, sort of the medical sort of emergency sort of subsided a little bit. They were sort of stabilized. They weren't as, you know, excited, and looked at one of the young EMTs and said, "You look very young." And so that's sort of when it may come out, when they sort of assess, but they never, the patients are never looking at them saying, don't help me. Because again, there's a level of professionalism and care that puts any of those sort of concerns by the wayside.
So you had this awesome experience and you felt like it really helped you prepare for life in some fundamental ways, even though, as you said, you didn't end up becoming a doctor or anything like that. As you look at American society today, specifically with respect to young people in America, what impressions of that kind of led you to want to come back to this topic after being away from it? I mean, you've lived a busy and, by all accounts, fulfilling, interesting professional life. You live in California now. So why come back to this now?
Well, it sort of starts as a microcosm and then it becomes a macrocosm. So I always wanted to be able to do a documentary on this organization that had been so positively impactful to me. This organization has been featured on various news programs. You may have seen it on NBC Nightly News or the CBS Evening News or People Magazine. And, you know, those are all nice media hits, if you will. They're nice stories, but the news stories are 2 to 3 minute pieces. And it's very difficult to explain this very detailed, one-of-a-kind organization in 2 to 3 minutes. And generally, viewers don't get what I would consider the full story of the organization, how it works. Why does it work? Should these young people be doing what they're doing? How are they able to do what they're doing? What is the emotional, psychological impact? Why isn't it in every town in the United States? And that can't just be covered in 2 to 3 minutes, nor can you really get into the depth of training they get, or the impact that it has on the patients, the impact it has on the young people. So I always wanted to do that because I felt so benefited by going through the experience. What I realized after we finished the film and we started showing it is that there is a larger message. The goal of the film is not necessarily to start a bunch of teen-run ambulance services across the country. These days and times, you know, there's so many rules and regulations that would make it incredibly difficult to replicate what is happening in Darien. That said, really, what's the bigger message? The bigger message is that young people are capable of extraordinary things as long as they're given the opportunity by the adults in their lives. And so often we adults underestimate what young people are capable of. And often we want to protect them. They aren't given much responsibility. And we're really trying to promote the fact that there is an empowerment that young people can gain through responsibility. And that starts with adult mentorship and adults teaching young people skills. But more importantly, and the secret to Post-53 is that you need to then give the young people the responsibility to practice the skills they've been taught. Because once they start practicing the skills they've been taught, they gain a sense of empowerment. They gain that self-confidence. And that's really what we're trying to put forward, because by doing that, you're really starting to create the critical thinking, problem-solving leaders of the future, which is really what we need to not only build communities, but also really set our young people up to be the best they can be in adulthood.
So you use this expression when we were chatting before the recording, that you get a sense that to some extent kids today are wrapped in bubble wrap, you know, through childhood and adolescence, and that this protection, well-intentioned as it may be, is not really preparing them for adulthood, where, you know, that's the bubble wrap is not there anymore, and they need to be prepared. To what extent do you think the things like this EMS service are going to help with that? Or, you know, because you said we're not expecting other towns to establish EMS services like this, but we'd love to see people putting more faith in and maybe giving more power to young people.
Well, I think it's about exposing young people in a very structured, guided, mentored way the realities of life. And when I was talking about bubble wrapping, like what we've seen is that there are many young people who go through school successfully, and I say successfully in quotes, meaning that they've got a good GPA, they've done well on their SATs, they've got good extracurriculars, but they're not really set up to succeed in the real world. And what I mean by that is having great coping skills when things go wrong, because in the real world, not everybody's a winner, not everybody gets the job. There are constant problems that you need to solve. And so you need to have those problem-solving skills, those critical thinking skills, and those coping skills to be able to move past that. And unfortunately, in a lot of instances, young people have become very great and proficient test takers. But that only has so much application once you get into the real world. And so, again, what we're trying to really promote is, like, let's show young people some of the realities of the real world, give them those tools that they need to solve these problems that they will inevitably face once they get into the real world, so they can successfully move past them.
Why do you think we've gotten to this point as a society? I mean, in the sense of being so cautious about exposing younger people to risk or situations in which they don't have control over the outcome?
Well, you know, I think it's part of the times. You know, today, life and the world is different than when we grew up. You know, many people my age, you know, who grew up in the 70s, we didn't have bike helmets. We never didn't wear seat belts. We certainly didn't have car seats. We didn't lock our doors. All of those things. So, you know, it's in part sort of a response from parents of a sort of a more dangerous world, I think, in some respects. But I think it was also just came out of like just wanting the best for young people and letting them have their childhood. But I think it was an over sort of course correct. I think there's a balance between being supportive and protective, but also the other side of that coin is really exposing young people to some of the difficulties in life, the realities of life, that are really necessary to round that young person out and really give them the support and the structure they need to be successful. The other thing we were talking about at lunch was that it became very important, or it was stressed as like a main goal when you're raising your kids. It's like, get them into great college. Well, what's the path to getting your kid into a great college? Because great college equals great success. That's what ultimately parents, I think, unilaterally were told. That means that your kid needs to have the highest GPA possible, and they have to have the highest SAT scores possible. And yes, some great extracurriculars, but that's really third. It comes down to the metrics. It comes down to the numbers. And so there was a lot of focus put on that to become these great test takers that would get the high GPA, that would get the high SAT scores, so that you could get into Harvard, let's say. The problem with that is that that is just sort of one piece of the pie. And so then what happens is that you've got this group of young people that are great test takers, and maybe they got into the great college, but yet they're not necessarily successful in the real world and getting a job or in a company. And what I often say is that as an executive producer, I'm hiring hundreds of people a year to work on different projects. And never once in nearly 25 years have I ever asked somebody that I was interviewing, what's your GPA, where did you go to school, and what'd you get on your SATs? It just doesn't come into play. What I want to know is, does this person have problem-solving skills? Are they critical thinkers? When they run into a roadblock, which they will, are they going to be able to solve it, or are they going to be paralyzed by it? Do they have great, you know, conversational skills? Can they connect with people? Are they going to represent the project and my company properly? Because I'm ultimately going to teach people what they need to do with their job. I just need them to come to the table with, again, that sort of critical thinking already sort of embedded in them, that problem solving already embedded in them, that those personal skills already there, so that we can build from that. That's really what's important to me as an employer. And I would say that it really is what any employer at the end of the day is looking at predominantly. And so I think we need to start creating programs for young people that help build those critical skills. Because at the end of the day, I think that is really what's going to benefit young people in the long run.
You know, one of the things we were chatting about earlier as well was the connection between sort of your story about this high school EMS and how the military also takes younger people who maybe right out of high school if they're enlisting, and then within about a year and a half, well, it depends on the service and obviously specialty, but maybe as quickly as a year and a half after enlisting, they're going to be making some decisions that are life and death decisions for other people, not just themselves. And it is something I know the military is concerned about today, that they want to see more recruits who aren't experiencing, you know, responsibility for the first time when they're joining the military. And the program you describe, I think more of that would be extremely helpful, actually, for the military to deal with a population that has people who are better prepared, you know, for that, where it's not the first time they're interacting with that.
Absolutely. You know, and with Post 53, the ambulance service in Darien that's run by the high school students, you know, they start at 13. And they go, which is right before their freshman year, and that takes them all the way to senior year, and many of them are 17, 18 by the time they graduate. But through that whole four-year period, they start with jobs. They have responsibilities. Now, the freshmen have, I guess, sort of lower-profile responsibilities. They're cleaning, they're washing the ambulances, they're doing the laundry, but they're still responsible for it, and they're held accountable. And with each job that they accomplish and they accomplish successfully, then they're given another job that has a little bit more responsibility, a little bit more weight to it. And that happens throughout the years that they're there. So that by the time that you come to be a 17-year-old senior and you're really the leaders of the organization, you know, the treasurer is overseeing a $350,000 a year budget. Now, whenever do you see a 17-year-old that's responsible for overseeing that? Now, it's important to say that these young people aren't just turned out to the wolves. Post 53 does not exist without dedicated adult mentorship. So if I take the example of the treasurer who's 17 years old and overseeing the $350,000 budget, there is an adult mentor that is tied to that person, someone that's come from finance that ultimately can talk about, you know, spreadsheets and money in and money out and all that. But again, the young person is still given the responsibility to do the work. They have a mentor, they have somebody who's there to guide them, but at no point is the adult just saying, don't worry about it, I'll just take care of it, because that defeats the whole purpose. And I would say, certainly having gone through the program myself, and obviously I'm biased, But it's like, that was so invaluable to have those opportunities to have responsibility throughout my high school career. And I served as the vice president of operations my senior year. And I was ultimately responsible for all three ambulances, not only making sure that they were fully equipped and ready to go 24/7, 365, but, you know, I was dealing with the state of Connecticut and making sure that we had all of the proper certifications and that we were, you know, always passing inspection. And again, as a 17-year-old, you know, to have that responsibility was incredibly invaluable. And I think what's interesting, and, you know, people watch the movie and they're like, oh, my kid couldn't do that, or even the kids say I could never do that. The fact of the matter is that the young people that are in this organization are ordinary young people that are doing something extraordinary. They're not extraordinary young people. They're just ordinary young people that were given an extraordinary opportunity. And I think that we need to try to do that more. The other thing is that these young people are volunteering 40, 50, 60 hours a week, 52 weeks a year, for 4 years.
That's a huge commitment.
For not only for no pay,
yeah,
but no school credit.
Yeah.
So the question is, well, why would anybody, let alone a teenager, let alone a teenager from a relatively affluent community, do this? And the reason is simple. They do it not only because they're able to do something that's really cool that most teenagers can't do, but they do it because they are treated like adults. When they're in high school, they're high school students. But when they're on that ambulance or they're running their organization at their headquarters, they are working alongside adults as peers. They work as peers with police, with fire, with doctors, with nurses, with their advisors. And to be treated like an adult and earn that respect, they're not just given it, they mm-hmm. earn it through the structure.
Which makes it more meaningful.
Absolutely. It's like to be treated like an adult as a 16-year-old is worth its weight in gold. And so people I know, and I've applied this throughout my career in film and television with the people I work with, people become empowered. People become empowered through responsibility because they take ownership of it. It's theirs. I did that. And it's like that, it just builds this confidence that you can ultimately go out and pretty much do anything. You may not always be successful, but you have this sort of feeling that if you keep working the problem in the situation, eventually you're going to get to some sort of satisfactory conclusion.
Well, I think you just said, one of the things you just said is the key to this whole story in many ways. It's that you're not always going to be successful. I mean, I think we want people to succeed so much that we're actually taking away from them the opportunity to own the success. You know, if it's guaranteed, then it's not meaningful. You know, it doesn't mean the same thing as when, you know, yeah, it was up to me. It didn't happen, but at least I own that result. So Tim, where can we look for your film? Can you talk a little bit about that for our audience to know kind of where to find it perhaps in the future?
Absolutely. So we are just embarking on a year-long nationwide, worldwide community screening event tour, if you will. We spent the last year on the film festival circuit. We've got several nice awards.
Congratulations.
Which were great. But, you know, now we're really about trying to push this message forward. So we've actually partnered with Vicky Abeles, who is with Real Link Films, also out of California. Vicky did a film called Race to Nowhere, which many people know. It really sort of talked about the education system and, you know, the focus or perhaps over-focus on test taking and some of the negative impact that can have. In particular, there was what she noticed in the school where her children were going, that there was a alarming rise in suicide, which seemed to be in part, you know, attributed to the young people being so focused and obsessed with their grades and their test scores, etc. So we really are going to take the film out and show it in schools, show it in community centers, show it in churches, to really hopefully inspire people and motivate people to show the capabilities of young people and really encourage them to give them opportunities to grow and to have responsibility. And so we're really looking forward to doing that over the next year. And then following that, then you'll be able to buy DVDs and download them on iTunes and all that. But we really kind of want to do a grassroots movement to start. And just like, you know, sort of, I guess, any diplomatic program, to be able to go and talk to parents mm-hmm. and talk to educators and talk to students, not only about the film, which is really just an example
right.
of the potential.
It's a symbol of a broader question.
Right, of young people. And really to get communities to see young people as a resource and that they can be very instrumental in building communities and fulfilling needs in communities. And so really what we're trying to do is have each community look within themselves, identify needs within the community, and ask the question, could this need be fulfilled with young people?
Mm-hmm.
And then go about the process of teaching and mentoring young people how to fulfill that need, teaching them the skills to be able to provide whatever service it may be. And then most importantly, giving the young people the responsibility to be to put into place, to practice what they've been taught. Because again, when young people are given the responsibility to practice the skills they've been taught, they become empowered.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining us here on the War Room Podcast. We appreciate you taking time to speak with us. And I wish you the best with rolling out High School 911. I encourage the audience to check it out as soon as you have an opportunity. And safe travels back home.
Really appreciate it. It's a pleasure to meet you. A fellow guy from Connecticut. We didn't talk about that.
That's right. Yeah. I'm also a sort of Fairfield County, Connecticut native. Yeah. There aren't many of us in this area. So it was fun running across him. Although my high school and his high school were rivals, which yeah. you guys have had the better end of that yeah, one for a while.
Ultimately
now.
We beat you in lacrosse.
Yes. Yeah. All right, Tim, thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
And that concludes our program. Thank you for listening. The views expressed in this podcast reflect those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views, policies, or positions of the U.S. Army or the Department of Defense. Let us know what you think. Provide us your feedback, comments, or suggestions through our webpage at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. And have a great day.